And welcome everyone to this show, We Are The Ones We've Been Waiting For. My name is Eilish D'Avalon and I have with us the wonderfully outspoken political commentator Max Eigen from the Crow House. Thank you for joining us, Max.
My pleasure, Dawn. My pleasure. Nice to be here.
Yep, so today we're going to be talking about mandatory vaccines because something that's just come into the Australian legislation is this no jab, no pay deal that the Department of Human Services is putting out on their website. But there's also the mandatory vaccine thing that's happening in America too, with the SB 792 mandate. So it's happening all over the place. So I thought we'd talk about that today.
Well, look, it is. It's happening everywhere. And the problem is it's actually part of a wider thing. I mean, it isn't just the vaccines. This is just one spectrum. I mean, it's about full spectrum dominance, and this is just one part of it. But, like, by introducing mandatory vaccination, they've really taken things to the next level because this is claiming a right of ownership over people's bodies. This is like they've been pushing us with this slavery system for so long. And now they're claiming a right of ownership over your flesh. And this is a very, very serious move for them to be making. Look, there's so much wrong with vaccinations. I mean, you know, whether you're pro-vaccination or anti-vaccination, though, it isn't really the point. The point is the right to choose. You know, but there's so much information out about vaccines, and there's so many questionable things in these vaccines. You know, the stuff they put in there, mercury, thimerosal, squalene, all sorts of things. We've seen people that got cancer from polio vaccines. Vaccines have been known to be used to depopulate and cause sterility in third world countries. We even had Bill Gates coming on recently. He said it a few years ago in a speech that with vaccines we could reduce the world population. And he said it quite openly a few weeks ago that vaccinations are the most effective method for depopulation. So you've really got to look at this. When the government starts bringing these things in mandatory and says you must inject this stuff into your body, and we don't really know what it is, and you look into it and you look what's in there, you know, it's fecal matter, there's degenerative diseases, there's all sorts of stuff in these vaccines, and they're saying this is being done to improve our health. I mean, these are highly questionable, highly questionable. There was a village in Mexico where the children received a vaccine, and 75% of the children in the village died after receiving the vaccine. So this is blatant depopulation. And for the government to be saying that this is law now and it's becoming mandatory and we have to do this, it's simply not acceptable. You know, there's too many studies that prove that these things cause problems. We've seen a huge rise in autism, so many issues. You know, you can't have something as complex and as controversial as vaccines being designated as being mandatory. It's simply not acceptable. So it's my great hope that the people of Australia will see this for what it is, and they'll rise up and they'll call this government out and hold them to accountability. This is a clear abuse of office. And the problem we have when fighting with this sort of stuff is that we always address the cloud of government, you know, and government is essentially a fiction. It's this thing, this big sort of beast, this mythical cloud that you can't really get to. What we've got to understand is it's the people within government that are the problem. So we need to find out who signed off on the legislation. I need to ask this person if they can prove the claim of ownership that they're exercising over our flesh, because this is a clear abuse of office. This is slavery. This is not acceptable. This is not what we employ government to do. And we employ government. It's important that people remember that. We employ these people. We elect people whom we trust, whom we are told are trustworthy people, to positions of power, and they are there to manage infrastructure for us and to make sure we have strong, viable societies. And they're all in abuse of office. And we've got to start calling this out. And I really hope that mandatory vaccines will do it. Like you said, they've introduced it in America as well. And we've seen 22,000 registered nurses in America refuse the mandatory vaccines. This is nurses that are refusing the mandatory vaccines, 22,000 of them. I mean, what does that say to you folks? I mean, they know what's going on. A lot of doctors won't have vaccinations. Tony Abbott, the former Prime Minister we had here, none of his children were vaccinated. So you've got to see where this is going. A lot of the politicians and the medical people won't vaccinate, and yet it's being mandated that we must. This is simply not acceptable. So hopefully it will be seen as an opportunity, for the people of Australia to stand up and call this out and realise that they don't simply have to do what government tells them. You know, they don't. They have to question these people, especially when they are mandating a right of ownership over your flesh. It's about freedom of choice, and we can't have that choice taken away. If they start doing this, what else are they going to do? I mean, what other rights are they going to take away? If it's okay for them to jab you with anything they want, and they're starting to label people who speak out against this sort of stuff as anti-government extremists and suggest that they have mental problems, then what are they going to be jabbing in you if you question the government's actions at all? You know, if you give them the ability to do this, you're really, really allowing humanity to be led into a very dark place. And I think that's the way it needs to be looked at. It isn't just about the vaccines. It's about the whole agenda here, which is control, ultimately.
Yeah, and I see that at the moment it's affecting the family tax benefit Part A supplement. But I see the ominous possibility of this being widespread so that all people that are accepting any disability or unemployment benefit or sickness benefit or veterans pension, you know, if they don't get the flu vaccine or the childhood immunisation program schedule that gets increased all the time, that they simply won't get paid. And then this will see a rise in poverty, in homelessness, in crime, in prostitution, in any way that people can, you know, or even the refugees, the reverse refugees, people trying to come here on boats, and they'll be the anti-vaxxers that'll be looking for another country where to live. You know, if we can't get this, you know, rescinded, we can't start reversing.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the way it's going. Like I said, we're being attacked on all fronts, and they will come for the pensioners. They're talking about doing this around about September 2016, I think. And what it will be, you'll find that they'll be saying that people need to get up on all of the vaccines that they've missed out on. So you're going to find people are going to have to go and have dozens and dozens of vaccines, probably. You know, they'll do something like this. And there's even been talk that Malcolm Turnbull has been saying that if people don't accept the vaccinations, they may be posing a risk to public health, and there's a possibility that such people would have to be placed in jail to prevent the spread of disease. This is the way they're playing it. So, you know, you can see where it's going, and they'll come for pensioners. They'll come for anybody who's getting benefits at all. And the way they're doing it, like they take the lowest, you know, income earners and the people who are most desperate, and they start depriving them of basic services if they won't comply with what the government wants. And they push it as far as they can. Now they pushed it to a right of ownership over your flesh. This will go out to more pensioners and more people receiving benefits. Then it will come to people who are even working and receiving, having subsidies for their children in daycare. So it'll come to them. It maybe already have come to those people.
Yep.
So we'll start going out into middle class and more opulent levels of society. And then, once they've digitized cash and all this sort of stuff as well, which is where they're going, once they've digitized everything, then they'll basically be able to cut off all services. They'll be able to switch you off if you don't accept the government's agenda. And that's why they want to digitize everything, because when it all becomes digital, then all your wealth and all your prosperity and everything exists in a virtual world. You can't just go and pull money out of the bank because there is no currency. It's all digital. It's all digital credits and energy credits and all this sort of stuff. You can't just buy gold and bury it in the backyard because they won't let you do that sort of stuff. So all your physical wealth is gone. And when you go to a store and you find that your thumbprint or your retinal scan or your card doesn't work because you're not up on your vaccinations, and so your services have been cut off until you comply, this is the way they will take it, and this is the way they are taking it. It's about removing more and more of our rights and controlling us more and more in ever more gradual increasing increments until they've completely got us by the short and curlies. And they've done this very, very well in Australia over the last 14 years or 15 years since 9/11. There's been 70 pieces of legislation that have been introduced into this country, virtually removed us of all of our rights, and virtually all of them. Anybody in Australia can be arrested without charge or trial. You can be arrested on suspicion without any hard evidence. They're coining terms such as anti-government extremists. So anybody who questions government is obviously extremists. this whole free man movement has been promoted and pushed by people, which is a complete rabbit hole and a complete trap. There is no remedy in any of the free man stuff. All it's been useful in doing is exposing how the fiction works, exposing how the legal system works. But those people who've gone out and pretended they're free and all this sort of stuff, they're jumping out of their little cage into a bigger cage and thinking that they're free. I mean, it's ridiculous. It doesn't work. And if you start standing up against government in that way, you're seen as an anti-government extremist and you can be arrested on terrorism charges and put in jail without charge or trial and kept there as long as they want. I mean, they can just keep renewing it. So all of these things are in place. We've got the things like the Vlad legislation in Queensland, the Vicious Lawless Association legislation, which was apparently put in place to deal with bike gangs. But if you read the legislation, it doesn't mention bike gangs at all. It just mentions organisations. Any organisation of more than three or more people who may be involved in violent or vicious or lawless associations or activity. And, you know, with the guidelines that they've put in place for these groups, it's any group or corporation or company or organization. This could be a chess club or a knitting club. Anything fits into the guidelines that they've put in this Vlad legislation. All it takes is for one person within that organization to commit a violent act. And then an entire organization and everybody in it is seen as being violent, vicious and lawless, and can be subject to arrest and held without charge or trial. So when you look at this, you look at things such as the mining operations and gas wells and things they've got going on in this country, and you look at the Lock the Gate movement, which I truly believe is controlled opposition because it doesn't address the correct issues. It's got everybody up on this bandwagon, everybody out there shaking their fist at the government, but they're not actually addressing the root core of the problem. They're not taking any action that will actually work. All they're doing is getting a lot of people up in arms and getting them with these lock the gate signs and all this sort of stuff. All it's going to take is once they open up the mining and start really raping this country the way they've got planned to do, which is going to be starting in the next year or two, probably when they start have the Commonwealth Games, which I think is later this year or next year. It's very, very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But when they have that, I imagine they will open the mining operations up then. And all it will take will be for one agent provocateur to commit one violent act in the name of Lock the Gate. If they can associate this person with Lock the Gate, then that gives the authorities the ability to go and arrest any person with a Lock the Gate sign on their car or on their fence, claim that they belong to a vicious lawless association and put them in jail. And it isn't up to you to, it isn't up for them to prove that you are a vicious lawless person. It's up to, for you to prove that the Lock the Gate organization does not carry out violent acts and vicious and lawless acts. So how can you prove that? You don't even know all the people who are part of the association. You know, so there's no way you can prove innocence. It's like me accusing you of stealing milk bottle money and asking me to, and asking you to prove that you didn't. You can't. The onus is on me to prove that you did go and steal the milk money. You know, you can't prove that you didn't. The onus is always on the accuser to prove guilt. Innocence is very, very difficult to prove. You know, if there's no evidence of guilt, that should be proof of innocence or enough proof of innocence or enough reasonable doubt to let people go. But it doesn't work with this legislation. You need to prove your innocence. So, you know, it's like when they're saying they're arresting people who have been to the Middle East to come back to Australia. They need to prove that they weren't involved in terrorist activities while they're in the Middle East. Well, how can you do that? How can you do? Can the government prove that you were? Maybe you just went over there to visit your cousin or something. Maybe you just went over to have a look. Maybe you went over as a tourist, whatever. But now you come back from there and you have to prove you haven't been involved in terrorist activities. You can't do that. You can't prove innocence in these cases. You know, so this is where we're going, and you see how all this has been structured and how it's all been set up. And now you've got these mandatory vaccines coming in, and people who are even questioning this, the rhetoric we're hearing from politicians is ridiculous. People, there was one politician saying that anti-vaccine extremists should be jailed. You know, because they're anti-vaccine extremists, you know. This was just yesterday or the day before when some backbencher said this, you know. Of course, they just put it out there, you know, anti-vaccine extremists. Okay, so the word extremist is being bandied about a lot for anything that questions the actions of government. And this mandatory vaccines, this is just the tip of the iceberg. You can see where they're going with this. You know, now all of these politicians, you know, they're all in abuse of office. They're all in breach of trust, and they're doing some pretty bad things, and they're locking this country down pretty dramatically. And we need to stand up and call it. We do. We need to start asking the right questions politely. We don't need violence or anything, but we need to start standing up and calling this and see how it's all connected, because the vaccine issue is not a standalone issue. It's connected to all this other globalist stuff. You know, you can tie this in with the TPP and all the mining operations and all the laws that have been removed and 9/11 and the whole fake war on terror, the whole thing. It's all one big theatrical play, and it's all connected, and it affects every person on the planet. I think people are seeing it now, but unfortunately people are not seeing what the way out is. Everyone's looking for a way out. But I think people are seeing what the system is now. I think it's so in their face now that they can't help but see it.
It's absolutely ridiculous that a parent who, you know, is making a conscientious decision to not to vaccinate their child because they've read the statistics on the spiking in autism, and, you know, brain injury and, you know, and they don't want their children to be forced vaccinated, are now potentially going to prison. And this is what's going to happen if we don't take a stand. And this is happening in America, with the bill, with the 792 bill, as well as the 277 bill. So this is, they're removing the exemptions in America, and we still currently have a very limited amount of exemptions in Australia when it comes to what we can use. And one of them is there's been a church set up in Brisbane called the Church of Conscious Living that some people are signing up for because they are, this church is opposing vaccines. So Church of Conscious Living is taking on a lot of members for that specific reason to for exemptions. But, I'm seeing a day that one day they're going to remove these exemptions completely. We're not going to have any room to move. And this is the scary thing, you know?
It is a scary thing, and that's what they're doing. And that's the reason they set them up as churches, because churches have all these exemptions. Otherwise, you wouldn't have all these tax-free churches running around and all these pedophiles running around in churches, because there's certain leeways that are given to religious institutions. You know, the Pope the other day openly admitted that there are 8,000 pedophile priests stationed around the world. That's nice, you know. So they get away with all these things because they're churches. So that's something that people are using to their favour at the moment. Like you say, the Church of Conscious Living, which is all basically about anti-vaccinations. There's also an MMS church that they've set up for MMS, because this is being outlawed, and MMS cures so many things. I mean, people say, oh, this is bleach, that this is not. It's actually amazing stuff. I've got friends in Peru that use it, and it heals all sorts of things. And so they've had to set up a church in order to do that. And they've got bishops and priests and all this sort of stuff, ministers of ordained ministers, and they're all legal under the church guidelines and under religious guidelines. So that's the way people are getting away with it. That's a difficult loophole for the government to close up, because the churches are so corrupt and they run so much stuff in the background, arms and all sorts of things. I mean, the Vatican is even involved in arms sales in the Middle East. So, you know, there's so many loopholes that churches have. So that's a very difficult one for them to close, that loophole. It freaks a lot of people out when they see a church or something. I think, oh, you're joining a cult, a Church of Conscious Living. Who's this? This is some cult thing. And they don't realize it's been done for legal and tax reasons. And it's a way to actually be able to express yourself. And because anything can be classed as a religion. If your religion is being healthy, okay, so be it. That's your religion. You may still have another religion. You may still believe in God, and you may all be able to fit, even if you're a Christian, you may be able to fit all that in there together, wrap it up into your own version of that sort of thing. But that's why they do it. So you can bring your belief system on board and you can set it up and, hey, there's all these people who agree with me. So we've set up our own church and now we have religious freedom. We now have religious immunity. And that's why they do it, because of the laws of religious freedom. So it's a good idea, and it's a good way to get around things. But ultimately it is about control. It's about control of every aspect of our lives. And they are closing up all the loopholes. That's why there's no remedy in all the Freeman stuff. There's no remedy in any of this. It's only been useful in exposing how the fiction works. You could go in and ask questions to politicians and ask questions to council, and you could create a lot of stink. You know, I've been recommending that people start forming action groups. And this is what Full Circle Project's all about, is forming action groups. If you can get a group of 20 or 30 people in your community, and you can go to the local council meetings and you can start asking questions in the right way, you're going to really start putting a bee in their bonnet. Now, you get one or two people go in there and it gets, they just throw you out. And you get too many people, you get a Jean Provocateurs in there, and they want to start shaking their fist and yelling out and complaining and asking, you know, angry questions and all this sort of stuff. Don't do any of that. Just have a support group there with you. Delegate a spokesman who is polite and eloquent, who will ask certain questions to the government, and always begin with things like, is it not true that blah, 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 you know, this legislation you put in place is causing all of these hardships. So can you please show cause why you and the people who signed off on this legislation should not be held accountable for your actions, you know, and do it in a very polite way. But always ask them as a question. Never accuse the council or the government of doing anything, because if you accuse someone, the onus of proof is on you, unless, of course, it's the government accusing you of something, and then the onus of innocence is on you. It's funny how they work that, isn't it? But in the real world, the onus of proof is on you. If you're in a courtroom or you're in a council chambers and you accuse the government of something, then you have to prove that. So you always ask it, is it not true that this has just happened because you wrote this stuff down as legislation? So can you please show cause why you and the council and those who approved of this legislation shouldn't be held responsible for this and possibly investigated for abuse of office? Because this is not acceptable. Our community does not employ you people to do this, you know. So you've got to start questioning this. You know, the problem we have with dealing with councils, I was actually at a meeting last night, it was a Full Circle type meeting last night. It's about 20 or 30 people there, which was really great to see. And one of their questions was about council and how they can deal with local councils. And, you know, appealing to the people within councils and all this sort of stuff. And I was saying you can do that to a certain degree, but the problem we have with councils in Australia is that there's an organization called the Municipality Association, and it's a council municipality association, and it's one for every state. There's the Victorian Municipality Association, the South Australian, the New South Wales, the Queensland. And these municipality associations are who gives the directives out to the local councils. It doesn't come from state government or federal government. It comes from the municipality association. And they get their orders direct from the United Nations. Mm. So this is the United Nations kind of coming in by stealth and covertly managing things on the ground level in all of our communities by the mechanism of local council. So all these agendas that we see the local councils doing, going, how are you guys getting the idea to do this? This is the United Nations is doing. Look what they've done to Byron Bay now. Byron Bay is outrageous. This is hippie alternate town where I live. Now, even you go to the park, the local amenities block, the local toilet block is now this stainless steel digital TARDIS where there's these red lights and you push a button and the door slides open and it's like you're walking into a spaceship. And you've got a little timer there, which times how long you're allowed in there. This music's playing, this horrible digital music, which just makes you want to run out and leave as quickly as you can. And it's all just the most incredibly disturbing experience. You just go into the lavatory in Byron Bay, you walk in there and the door's like this little spaceship door and that, and you stand in there for a second and go, no, I'm going to go to the hotel. And you just exit and go somewhere else because it's just, it's terrible. Now they've got parking meters in Byron. All the way through Byron, it costs $3 to park in Byron for 1 hour. And every hour, the meters only go for an hour because they want to rotate because it's a tourist town. They want to be fair to everybody, right? So every hour, you've got to go and move your car to another parking spot and pay another $3. For the locals who are going to the local cinema to watch a movie, you go to watch Star Wars and they've got to leave the cinema every hour to move their car, hoping there's another. It turns into car wars, you know, and you miss out on 15 minutes of the movie every hour because you've got to go and move your car. And it's right through town. All the tourists and everybody, it's $3 an hour to park in Byron. you go to Byron now and it's like a ghost town. Nobody goes there. Everyone's just going, well, this is really bad. And all the locals who just come in to do their shopping, they're in town for like 10 minutes. They've got to pay $3 to go to the chemist or the bakery or the butcher or whatever it is that they're doing in town. Not many butchers in Byron, but whatever it is they're doing in town, it costs them $3 an hour to do it. It's across the board for locals, and there's no parking allowed anywhere on the sides of the roads anywhere. All these signs up all over the place, and you know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous what they're doing. And that's just an example. But you look at that and you say, well, why would the government want to do this? Well, they don't. It's a UN directive. It's creating these smart towns, and they've picked Byron Bay because that's the alternate epicenter of Australia. So they've just gone in there and they're just digitizing the whole place and converting the whole place into this smart town, and just driving all of the alternate people out into the hills. And it'll just set up an example of how they're going to do it all around the place, you know. And when it all becomes digital and it all runs on thumbprints, eventually you'll pay, you know, 20 cents or $2 to go and use the little TARDIS that they've got in Byron. The way you do in England, if you're in the train stations in England, you've got to pay 20p or something to get through the turnstile to use the public toilets in the train station, which is interesting when you're in Australia and you kind of arrive there and you're rushing between trains and you go, what? But I don't have 20p, you know. I just want to go to the convenience, you know, and what's going on here. So eventually it'll be a pay thing and it'll be timed, and you'll have to pay, you know, 20p or 20 cents or $2 or a dollar or whatever to use the convenience. It'll be a thumbprint or a retinal scan. So they know who it was, went in there. Who knows, I'll probably be analyzing things soon to see where you ate, you know. They want that much information on people. I mean, nothing would surprise me with these people. You'll probably have a digital readout there that will explain your diet to you and how you need to improve things or whatever, you know. We recommend that you buy these Monsanto products to improve this situation that we just detected in your stool. You know, you can imagine what it'll be. You know? But have you been to Byron and seen this thing that they've got there?
I'm a bit scared to go into Byron, Maine these days. Max, I've got a teepee between Nimbin and Lismore in the forest, right behind Nimbin Rocks on mountaintop. But when I go into Byron, it's very rare. It's only to go and visit Dan Schreiber at Starseed Gardens. But actually going into the town, most of the alternatives that kind of stay away from there, it's just, you know, bogans and surfies these days.
It's scary. It's really scary stuff. They've managed to do this in a matter of 2 years or 12 months. They've managed to turn Byron into this thing.
Yeah.
And it's scary. And you say, okay, well, they've done that. They've managed to do it really quickly, and they've done it to probably the most alternate town in the whole country. I mean, it's been a process over probably 20 years. They've gradually turned into Ibiza for a while, you know, and it's kind of got to that point. And now they've digitized it all, and now they've made it pay for everything, which is going to drive all the tourists away anyway. So they've shot themselves in the foot with that. None of the locals are going to put up with it, I don't think. So, but it's an interesting thing. It's interesting how they've done it. So you can see where it's going to go in capital cities and where it's going to go in other countries. You'll have these little digital TARDIS conveniences. We'll have everything will be digital and everything will be monitored and everything will be pay per use, you know. And they're bringing this into the home as well through the smart grid. Now, they've always wanted an access point into the home. They were hoping it would be digital television, but not everybody went for the digital television. I don't even own a television, but you know, you get those digital set-top boxes and they watch you. They watch you and you got these 3D TVs that map the room. Everybody thinks, oh, it's great, 3D TV. You go, look, everywhere I sit in the room, it knows where I am, so I adjust the pixels so that it's 3D for me and it's 3D for him and 3D for her. What it's doing is it's mapping the room. It's working out how many people in the room. They've got facial recognition. They know where you're looking. They know where you're sitting. And they're listening to you. They're monitoring what you're saying. There's cameras and audio equipment in all of those set-top boxes. So, and what they wanted to do was get this whole, like the home entertainment system, like this whole Windows media center where you've got everything connected and you do it all through your television because your television is their interface, how they can watch you. And I tried to do it with Windows 10. Windows 10 is basically spyware. It monitors everything you do. It monitors every picture you open, sends information to Microsoft. It listens to you all the time with that new Cortana app. So you've got to say, hey, Cortana, and it'll answer you. But the fact that it'll answer you when you say that means that it's listening to you all the time. Where's that information going? It's monitoring all the conversations in your house. And it's everything you open, it sends the information to Microsoft about what you're doing, what all your search histories are. Like there's traffic. You open a JPEG and there's information that's sent to Microsoft. There's traffic and you can't turn it off. So this is the sort of stuff that they're doing. And they've looked for this way into people's homes. Of course, not everybody uses Windows. Not everybody's gone for the Windows 10 update. So the access point they found is the electricity grid. So what they do is they put a smart meter on your home, and then they give you smart appliances, smart toaster, smart washing machine, smart fridge, smart TV, everything smart, which monitors how much you use it. You've got refrigerators now. You can go and buy. They've been available for a few years that are actually hooked up to the internet. It will tell you when your milk is getting low. You put the milk in the right milk compartment. It'll tell you when your milk's getting low, and you can order new milk on your internet connection, pay with it on your credit card, and it'll get delivered to your door. Whatever it is, it'll monitor what's in your fridge, and it'll tell you when it's getting low, and you can order new items through the fridge. So it's already smart. It's online, you know. And this is what they're doing. So eventually it will be pay per use for all of your household appliances as well. And they'll figure out what you're using more and what you're using less of, which ones use more energy and which ones don't. And then it comes down to energy credits. So if we replace currency, you know, and get a global currency, which is what they want to do, all they've got to do is crash all the dollars. And it might take them a while. I think it will take them a while to get the currency they want in place if we let them do it, if we don't wake up to what they're doing. But what the currency will be energy credits. So, you know, we don't need – once it becomes digital, then you don't need to call it a dollar anymore or a euro or pounds or anything like that. It's just credits. So how do you get those credits? Well, if you're working, there's no good giving you these things that we call dollars or whatever. It's all just credits anyway. So it's just energy credits. How much energy are you putting into the system? That's how much energy you can get out of the system. And everything's paid for with energy credits because we've got to worry about global warming and all. It's all about energy, isn't it? You see where it's going, the little precursors to all of this, where it's going. I've got the access point to your home through your electricity grid. They're monitoring all in the smart meters, and you start getting measured by energy that you use. This is the things like the Trojan horse of the Venus Project, which was all about a resource-based economy. You look about a resource-based economy, well, what was it? What were they talking about? They were talking about how much energy you put into the system is how much energy you get out of the system, so everyone evenly contributes. You know, okay, well, what's this? This is energy credits. This is a whole new world order, new currency system. And when it all becomes smart, you've got an artificial intelligence basically controlling things from the top, which is designating duties to different ministries, if you will, people in different positions in government. They're just carrying out the tasks as designated to them by the AI. The Prime Minister and the Federal and Congress and all this becomes figureheads. They become just there for effect, just so, like, yeah, so it looks like we've got government. But ultimately, it's all designated by the AI, which controls everything according to resources and economics. It's all about balancing the books and you know, moving the stock around and keeping things functioning properly. Look at the world as one big department store that produces its own goods. You've got different communities that produce stuff for the main center in the middle, like Hunger Games. You know, this sort of stuff is where they're going with it. So two major classes, the ultra-rich and decadent and the super poor who just do all the menial work. And it's all controlled by AI. And what energy you put in is what energy you get out. So if you're someone who wants to go and build an alternate community, and that's all very well. You want to go and build an alternate permaculture community and become self-sufficient. Well, you're never really going to be completely self-sufficient, not if you live in this world, because you're going to need things. No matter how self-sufficient you are, you're going to need things. You might have to buy heritage seeds. You might need to buy piping or something to make a water course. You might need to buy a pump. You might need to buy a tractor or a car or a vehicle. You might need to travel somewhere. You may need to do something. You're still going to need to interact with this larger society in some way at some time, no matter how alternate and independent you become. But if the only way you can...
You need, like, petrol for your chainsaw, for example. You know, like I know people that live so far off the grid, so far out of town, you know, like in Tabulum and places like that, that they still need to go into town just for something like, you know, petrol for the chainsaw because they haven't gotten around that yet. Yeah, so.
You need to buy a chainsaw. You need to, there's going to be things you need to interact with. So when it becomes the point that the only way you can go and purchase your petrol for your chainsaw is with energy credits, then if you're not putting energy into the system, you have no energy credits to go and purchase any fuel. So that means you have to work within the system in some way. You have to be contributing to the system in order to get anything back out of the system, not unless you're drilling for your own oil, which, of course, they won't let you do no matter how much you pretend you own your land. Sure. You know, they claim right of ownership over all of that stuff. So you've got to be interacting with the system. And if you're not doing something that you love, then a task will be assigned for you, you know, because you need to be working within the system in order to get energy credits, in order to get anything back from the system. And then you don't even need to be paying your bills unless you, like, you're going shopping and you exchange energy credits for a loaf of bread or whatever. But as far as the usage of your appliances in your home, this will just be automatically deducted by whatever the electrical company says it is that you use. And then you might want to fly to Perth to go to your daughter's wedding. And you might look and I'll say, well, hang on, you haven't got enough energy credits left in this month to be able to afford the ticket because of the amount of energy it's going to take to fly a plane to Perth and back. So you're about 600 energy credits short of that. So you're going to have to wait till next month, till next month's quota, you know, or work a little harder to get more energy credits in order to do this. So it'll all be controlled. That's the way they're going. And the access point to your home is through the smart system, the smart grid that they're putting in place. You know, just the idea of a digital fridge that's doing all this and it's online, once it becomes computerized and becomes AI controlled and starts talking to your toaster, and the toaster starts talking to the washing machine, and then the government says, well, hang on, these washing machines are using a lot of power, really, and they're offsetting the grid. People are doing the washing while they're cooking lunch, and that's not acceptable. So we might designate that washing machines can only work from midnight until 4 in the morning, which means everyone's going to have to program their machines to work at 4 in the morning. And I mean, they could do anything they want. They can control every aspect of your life once they digitize it and once energy credits becomes the currency. And that's really the way it's going, you know. And this is something we take for granted, you know. We look at the whole system and we scream and rant and rave at the politicians and all the legislation that's going on, but we just accept the technology as being convenient. And what they're doing is they're keeping us distracted in many ways while this digital prison is being built around us. Technocracy. I mean, there was a book that came out in 1938 called Technocracy, which talked about it. There's a great book actually by a man called Patrick Wood as well, I recommend everyone read, called Technocracy Rising, fantastic book, which explains it very, very succinctly where this is all going. And it's important to see it, that this is where it's all going. It's like Brave New World on steroids. So, you know, you look at this whole mandatory vaccination push, it's all part of the same thing. It's all this push for control a little bit more of an aspect of your life. But once they've got control of ownership of your flesh through mandatory vaccines, it becomes far more acceptable to bring in things like this digital smart grid. And once the threat of terrorism gets more and more and worse by bringing all these refugees into all these countries and then staging a few terror attacks and blaming it on them, then it becomes necessary to digitize currency so the terrorists can't do these backdoor transactions and all this sort of stuff. So you can see how we're being shepherded, how we're being molded. And the depopulation agenda is part of it. The vaccines are part of it, you know, like, and even the internet is part of it. They've managed to locate where all the dissidents are, and these people will start disappearing in the night if they're not careful. People who don't start making a stand in the right way will start disappearing in the night. You know, too many people are shaking their fist and being angry and trying to fight the system rather than simply uniting their communities with knowledge and standing up against the system and asking the right questions. You know, that's really what needs to be done. So, I mean, it's so interwoven. It really is. All this stuff is completely interwoven. And not too many people are seeing it. Too many people are distracted, got their heads down rabbit holes. No one's addressing the current crisis, which is unfolding right around us, which could be addressed very quickly you know, if people are looking for people to point the finger at or, you know, just doing all sorts of things which are not addressing the problem, people have been very, very much led away from it. You know, we've seen a huge divide in the response to this system in the last couple of years, right as we were reaching a real tipping point and things were really looking like we were going to make some good change. There was a massive divide in the alternative media. And people aren't really paying attention to what's going on around them. A lot of the research people are doing, I mean, in another couple of years, they're not going to have access to the internet in the way we have now because they didn't pay attention to what's going on now. And I really believe we need to do that. This is a real turning point this year. And if we don't rein this system in and stop these politicians, this catastrophe in their tracks this year, I think we're going to be in serious trouble. You know, we have to pull our heads out of the sand, pull our heads out of our rabbit holes for the moment and unite together and stand up and call this criminal cabal out for what they are. You know, we've got a multi-generational, multinational crime family, which is infiltrated into all aspects of Western politics and is running this world and it's running it into the ground. They're depopulating the planet. They're doing all these mandatory vaccines. They're doing the whole thing. And if we don't call this, you know, we're just going to allow our countries to be destroyed. This country is going to be turned into an open cut mine within the next couple of years. And, you know, the politicians will run off to the Caribbean or wherever it is they go. And the people will be left to deal with these brain dead thugs that most of our police are these days. I mean, there's still good cops in there, but a lot of them are just these low IQ thugs who just do the corporate line and follow the corporate rules. And that's the problem, you know, with the TPP and all the stuff that's coming in here, it's a corporate takeover of this country. And we still have an opportunity to call it. And vaccines, this mandatory vaccines is definitely a trigger point and an opportunity for us to do so. But if we don't, then we're going to be heading for a pretty dangerous place, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, just the fact that local councils themselves are illegal, you know, there's an article, called Council Rates Are Illegal in Australia on truthology.org.au if people want to have a look at and read details about that, about the research that's been done on local councils and how we don't have to pay rates. We can offer them, for example, you know, okay, we'll pay for our garbage collection, but the rest of it's just, you know, insanity. And so once we realise that local councils are illegal, that state governments have no right over us, that, you know, bring something back to, say, even the Constitution, would you think that's the way to go, is to go back to the Constitution? I mean, I know that the Indigenous were considered flora and fauna, and there's flaws in the Constitution for that reason, but so much of this new legislation, these bylaws, are actually illegal pieces of legislation that people don't have to follow if one sticks to something like the Constitution, Max.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the whole concept of whether local councils are illegal or not, I mean, this is speculative. There's things such as the Australia Act and things that, which people will say that's illegal. So, I mean, it's a huge rabbit hole to get into, and I don't believe there's any remedy there. I mean, I think the remedy lies in stepping above the whole thing and simply calling these people out as the criminals that they are. It's like I said with about fracking the other day, how fracking, you know, the attack on our water table, it's effectively, what is the nation of Australia? It's the people. We are the nation. You know, the whole, if you want really want to get into nationhood and all that sort of stuff, okay, well, we are the nation. And we need water for life. So therefore, any threat to water, you know, water is essential for the security of the nation. We are the nation. And any threat to water must be seen as a threat to national security. So can the government please show us the studies they've done which show that this practice is safe, or can they please show cause why they shouldn't be dismissed? You know, because, and that steps above the whole thing. It's a simple thing. I mean, local councils, all this sort of stuff, ultimately they're just people. They're people that we employ to manage our infrastructure for us. That's what they're doing. Why are all these laws coming in place? Why do they need to collect all this money all the time? Why do they need to milk us and make us pay for every single aspect of our lives? How is that improving things? Why don't we ask these questions? How is it improving things? What's it improving the economy? Well, what is the economy? The economy is all these fictional numbers that you can't eat. And it's all based on this stuff that you borrowed from a private bank, and it's all about keeping balancing the books. How on earth does that help humanity? I mean, the economy is destroying humanity. It's not helping humanity. Can you show me how it is helping humanity? You know, like, we need to be, you know, have strong, empowered populations. This is what I was saying before, you know, get a group together of people and just start talking about this stuff and start talking about things and talking about ideas of how you'd want to improve society and things that, you know, practices you want to put in place, permaculture, earthships, all this sort of stuff. And then ask yourself why you can't do any of them, and then go to the council and tell them this is what we want to do now. And if you're going to prevent us, please explain why. Please show us how you have a right to of ownership over us. Please explain why you are allowing legislation to come in, which is milking us of our wealth and doing all these things you're doing. Why are you supporting an economic model over the needs of the people when you're claiming that the economy is there to benefit the country? We are the country. We are the people. We are the nation. How is this economy benefiting the nation if the nation, the people, are suffering? Please explain this to me. It's not making any sense. And if you're doing this, is it true that you as a local councillor receive all of your instructions from the municipality association? And is it not true that the municipality association receives all of its instructions from the United Nations? So please explain to us how this is benefiting the people of Australia. But always ask it, is it not true? You know, is it not true that this is happening? Don't ever accuse them. Get them to explain to you why it's going on, and get them to explain to you how it's not happening, because you can show them how.
Like, is it not true that my unvaccinated child, how can my unvaccinated child be a danger to your vaccinated child if your vaccines work?
Well, yeah, that's a strange way to ask it. But I mean, what you'd be doing is showing studies that show that all the damage of vaccines. There's a recent report that's been released in England through the Freedom of Information Act, which shows a 30-year cover-up of vaccines. There's a book a guy just put out of, it's on my Facebook page, of 1,000 peer-reviewed cases of vaccines that have caused damage. There's so much evidence. I mean, you could just put this on the table. Is it not true that these studies have been done and these are the results that have been shown? So can you please show me? And is it not true that it's been claimed by the medical association that vaccinated people spread disease because they're carrying these diseases and they go out and they spread them to unvaccinated people? Vaccinated people are actually more cause of spreading disease, as all studies have shown, even your own government studies have shown, than any unvaccinated people. And again, how can an unvaccinated person be a threat to a vaccinated person unless the vaccine doesn't work? You've got this claim of all this herd thing. We need everybody vaccinated because the unvaccinated person may come in contact with someone who is just recently vaccinated who hasn't kicked in yet, and they may pass the disease to them. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's reverse logic. The vaccinated people have been injected with these diseases and they're going out and they're spreading it everywhere. They even say that you should not allow your child near a pregnant woman if your child has been recently vaccinated, because it may spread the disease to the pregnant woman, who is very susceptible to diseases because she's pregnant. So this is their own guidelines telling you not to let vaccinated people go near pregnant women. And yet in the other breath, they're telling you that unvaccinated people are a threat to vaccinated people. This doesn't make sense at all. And you've got these morons online, these brain-dead idiots, who will argue this point for hours and hours and hours. You just don't get it. It's all these government studies. They don't look at all the other government studies show, and they don't look at any studies that don't come from government. You know, I've got a few basic rules in life, but the first rule is I never believe anything the government tells me. Nothing, zero, none of it. Okay, that's my first rule in life. You know, anything they tell me, I'll go and investigate for myself, because looking at the track record of these people, they're a bunch of habitual liars who seem to serve their own agenda. They've been doing that for hundreds of years. You know, just the way they claw over themselves to get to the top dog and the top position lets you know these people don't have your best interest at heart, folks. They really want to get there and control things. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nobody who wants to be president is suitable for the job. You know, I mean, would you want to run a country? I wouldn't want to run a country. It would be the last job I would want to do. Why would you want to control others? Why would you want to be in that position if it wasn't for the paycheck and the control that you get to exercise? You get to go there and be the top dog and carry all of your repressed biological urges and sociopathic urges on everybody else. And, you know, nobody who wants the gig suitable for the gig. That's the way we need to approach politics, you know.
Yeah, Yeah. Just look at the current candidates for the US election and their track records.
Hillary Clinton's a career criminal. She's got so much blood on her hands. She destroyed Libya. You know, sitting there cackling when Gaddafi was murdered on TV, murdered and raped with a metal pipe on TV, and she's sitting there cackling going, we came, we saw, he died. And she did it simply because they were going to do a gold-backed currency, and the African dinar was going to basically destroy their trade situation. That's what they did. All the recent emails that she tried to suppress have shown that. That's what it was all about. The whole thing was cooked up. She's a mass murdering bitch, that woman. She really is. She's the destruction of the divine feminine right there. She's a career criminal, a barefaced liar, Benghazi, Libya, so much stuff that that woman has done wrong. And the fact that she would even be allowed to run for president when she should be in jail rotting is ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. And look at Obama. I mean, look at it here. Isn't it interesting? I said to someone the other day, you look at the right wing in Australia is Malcolm Turdfull, who's ex Goldman Sachs, and the left wing in America is Obama, the so-called left wing, who is Obama, which is massive ties to Goldman Sachs. So banking runs the world, folks, and it's the same people. All these people with Goldman Sachs, right wing and left wing, two different countries, both Goldman Sachs. I mean, the fact that Malcolm Turdfull is an ex investment banker. I mean, fancy having him on as the prime minister. This is the last person we need running the country.
That's right. It's two wings of the one bird of prey. You know, that's all the left wing and the right wing is.
Yeah.
So, and you know, we're seeing this need to hang the bankers. You know, to try them for treason.
Well, that would be nice to try them under their own legislation to do something, but just disconnect from it, you know, actually disconnect from the system. That's what we're trying to do, or what Ken's put together with the World Citizen Initiative, is to attempt to disconnect from the system, lawfully, peacefully, remove all financial support for any government that's funding war. And there are mechanisms we can do and use within the system to do that. You know, I think we need to be sensible about this, but we've got a short time. We've only got a short time to do it. You know, if we don't find a peaceful, lawful way of doing this and using the fiction within itself and checkmating itself within its own fiction, then we're going to be in a pretty dangerous place soon. You know, too many people have been extremist about this. They've, you know, too many anarchists say, and when you look at the word anarchy, anarchy does not mean chaos, and anarchy means self-governance. Too many people with an anarchist point of view want total freedom straight away. We just collapse the system and everyone steps out of it. You can't do that. Too many people will suffer, and there's too many people who are still trapped within the matrix who don't even know what's going on. They don't know at all. And yeah, you can laugh and jeer at them and call them sheeple, but a lot of them are good people who simply haven't had access to the same information that you've had. People who've been told the internet is full of all this rubbish and you can't believe anything you see on the internet, and always trust your government or always trust your TV. People who join the military thinking that the United States is the greatest nation in the world, and they're going out to preserve freedom. You know, there's all sorts of good people who do what they do because they think it's the right thing to do, because they've been trained to think that way. And you can't hate these people or call them sheeple, and you can't just collapse the system around them if you want freedom for humanity, because they're part of humanity. You know, if you do that, you'll end up in chaos. There'll be bikers or violent factions that take over. There's a lot of people in society that have massive chips on their shoulders that will, you know, there'll be power vacuums and it'll become gang wars. It'll become like Libya, it'll become like Iraq, you know. So that's not the way to do anything. What we've got to do is be sensible about it and realize there are elements within the system that we can use against itself, which will serve to wake up the sleeping masses by using a language they understand within a legal system that they think is real. And that will, you know, at that point, you've got all of these sleeping masses, millions upon millions of them, who've woken up to this action that you're taking and see it as a good, viable action, who are supporting it. At that point, the puppet masters kind of have to hang their puppets out to dry and step into the shadows, because we've just stopped their system in its tracks. Because if they were to reveal themselves at that point to the sleeping masses, there'd be a revolution. They'd be deposed overnight. They'd be hanging from lampposts. So they're going to have to step into the shadows and allow things to take their natural course using the legal fiction against itself. And that will get us back to a point of safety. And then we can start actually exposing things a little bit more because we've got everybody's attention. We can start exposing what the real truths are. You know, we can start leading ourselves to a point of freedom for the first time in history, the first time we've ever seen freedom in the human condition. We have a real opportunity for that now if we're sensible about it and we use elements within the fiction to checkmate it and do it publicly and wake the sleeping masses up within their own fiction. And it'll be like the veil falling off. You'll be seeing people rubbing sleep from their eyes. They'll suddenly realize what's been going on if we're sensible about it. You know, and that to me is the true path to true anarchy, to true self-governance. You know, and if we don't, then we will have what anarchy is presented as, which is chaos, which is not what anarchy is. Anarchy is self-governance, but it's always been presented as chaos and bloodshed and war and blow on the streets and people throwing rocks and gangs and all this sort of stuff. That's not anarchy. That's chaos. And that's what we will have if those with the extremist view of the anarchist movement who just want instant freedom straight away, that's what we'll have. We won't have instant freedom at all. We'll have hell on earth. And I think a lot of these people are either agents provocateurs or they've just been taught the wrong idea. They're too much of a rebel. They want to shake their fist and point the finger at someone and not realize that it's us holding the system up. It all happens because we fund it all. We support it all. You know,
yeah.
No, no, we are supporting it, and we need to remove that support and remove that funding from it legally, peacefully, lawfully, within their own fiction, very, very publicly. And that will really send a clear message. And once you've done that, you're going to find a huge groundswell of people that are going to want to get on board because you've just given them a way out in a language that they understand. And it isn't remedy. It isn't ultimate remedy, but it's a path to it. It's a stepping stone. It's the first step. At least it gets us to a point where we can regroup and we can plan a strategy from there. It circumvents their plans and stops them in their tracks. So that's what we're working on with the World Citizen Initiative.
And stop funding Israel and stop paying tax, which is voluntary anyway. You know, stop funding these wars by non-compliance.
Well, yeah, but you get into this whole voluntary tax thing and you start getting into these rabbit holes in these areas of debate. Yeah, I mean, sure, tax in the United States is voluntary. I don't know what the tax is here in Australia. I don't know how they've got it worked out. I think all of it should be voluntary. I think we should live in voluntarist societies, which is what anarchy is. But, again, you start getting into rabbit holes of debates, claiming tax is illegal and councils are illegal and all this sort of stuff. There's all of these issues that we can deal with and look at that just keep us tied up in these little rabbit holes and keep us locked in their fiction and keep us debating the point. If we step above the whole thing, we realize that we've got a cacistocracy that runs this planet. We've got a criminal cabal, like I said, multinational, multi-generational criminal cabal that's running things. And funding Israel is a key we could use right now. I put out a video recently called Save Gaza, Save the World, because people don't realize the opportunity that Palestine provides for the world, for freedom. I mean, I don't just speak out against Israel because I hate Jews. I don't hate Jews. I've got Jewish friends. But I do not appreciate the actions of Israel, the state of Israel. It's a rogue state. And it hides behind the smokescreen of anti-Semitism, which is an invented word, which has been used to allow this rogue state to do what it's doing. It's a rogue state that's puppeteered by the Rothschilds and same banking cartels. It's not even the Jews that are doing it. So you can't even look at it this way. The whole Jewish ideology and the supremacist ideology has been used to brainwash the people in that state and exalt that state to a status that it doesn't deserve to have. And now it's being used to carry out war crimes all around the planet, all around the Middle East anyway. So, but Gaza Strip essentially, I mean, we can get into all these debates about Israel and all these debates about Palestine, all these debates about who the land belongs to, all these debates about who the terrorists are, all sorts of things. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. What you've got to look at is the actions, okay? And it doesn't matter if this is Japan doing it to Paraguay. It doesn't matter what state it is. Gaza Strip itself, regardless of all the other questions of West Bank and all these things, the fact that Gaza Strip exists, this is collective punishment, which is a breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. It's an open war crime under international law, Nuremberg, you know, the trials from World War II. So, therefore, that's an international war crime. It's not a debatable point. Just the fact that it exists, and there's a war around it, and there's a blockade. That is collective punishment, because 1.5 million of the people in Gaza Strip, of the 1.8 million people in Gaza, 1.5 million of them had nothing to do with the election of Hamas. So none of those people should be held in collective punishment. And Hamas was a democratically elected government anyway. You know, we're always told that they took over by force, but they didn't. The people voted for Hamas. And that's another thing that they use, doublespeak. They'll say, Hamas seized control in 2005 or 2007, whatever it was. But then in the other breath, they'll tell you that, oh no, well, they voted for Hamas, so they deserve what they get. Well, hang on. If they voted for Hamas, how did Hamas seize control? It's because the rival party, Fatah, would not leave office after the people voted them out. And so Hamas had to actually go in there and throw them out of the office. And while they did that, there was Israeli soldiers standing on all the street corners watching the whole lot go on. Didn't help, didn't do anything. And so the whole concept that Hamas took over by force is a lie anyway. They were voted in. So it's a democratically elected government, and the population is being held in collective punishment because of that. That's an open war crime. So that gives us the opportunity to arrest every single politician in the Western world which is funding or supporting Israel, because they are all funding and supporting an open war crime, a breach of Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Malcolm Turnbull, all the politicians in this country, any media apparatus, any corporation that is funding Israel, they are all funding war crimes. And it's not a debatable point. That gives us a tool we could use to arrest the entire global kakistocracy right now. All we have to do is get a united response by the people, open up our hearts and stand up and call it, you know. But so people don't, because they're all caught up in this whole Jewish-Palestinian thing, Israeli-Palestinian thing, you know, whether this is God's chosen and the land of, you know, all this rubbish that they've been fed, which is all irrelevant. It's not about any of that. What it's about is 1.8 million people, average age of 17, think about that, over half the population is children. 1.8 million people have been held in collective punishment in the most horrendous of conditions. They've been that way for like 8 or 10 years now, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And we have the ability to call it and save those people, and also save ourselves by arresting this whole kakistocracy, because if they can be shown to be war criminals, and all the successive governments, both sides of the fence, anyone who supported Israel can be shown to be war criminals because Israel is carrying out war crimes, then how is any of the legislation that they wrote in the last 10 years valid, or however many years it's been? How is any of that valid? How's the legislation which allowed fracking or the TPP or any of this stuff, how is any of this valid if it can be shown that the person who wrote the legislation is a war criminal? And it can. It can be proven, because Gaza Strip exists, and these politicians, thousands of them, all support the state that is carrying out this war crime. That's right there. That's right there. That's under their own legal fiction, right under there, under their own international law. We could call this out right now if we would just open up our hearts to the Palestinian people, to the children trapped in Gaza Strip. Now, forget all this whole Muslim, Jew, Israeli, Palestinian concept out of your head. These are children, and they're beautiful children. I've been there. They're wonderful, wonderful, gentle people who hold themselves with such dignity despite the horrendous conditions that they're forced to live in. And once you go there and see these people, it's life-changing. You cannot help but change your entire worldview after visiting Palestine. So, yeah, it's something we can use, you know. It's a tool there right for us. It's an opportunity, and we should grasp it.
Well, the most checked out book in the UN library in 2015 was The Immunity of Heads of State and State Officials for International Crimes. So they know what's coming. They know what's coming. International war crimes against humanity. You know, the tribunal that was started in Kuala Lumpur with Alfred Lamamot Weber. This is what we need to do, is set up the international court and start trying this. They're already looking for immunity. They're looking for that. That's the most checked out book last year. So they're preparing. And what we need to do is we need to prepare as well, because they know what's coming. They know what's coming.
And look, you know, far as immunity goes, you know, a lot of them don't deserve immunity. A lot of them have done some really bad things. But hey, I'm not into punishment. I don't really want to punish people. I just want them to come clean and own up, you know. But there's going to be people who just don't deserve immunity. People like Hillary Clinton, she's been jailed for the rest of her life. That woman's a psychopath. She's dangerous. You know, and if you left her and took her from her wealth and threw her in the suburbs, she'd probably become a child killer or something. I don't know. She would be the worst neighbor you could possibly have. She's a psychopath, full-blown psychopath. So there's some people who've got the blood of literally millions of people on their hands that probably wouldn't ever get immunity. But certain lower echelon people, I mean, I'd be quite happy to give people immunity for whistleblowers and for people to speak out and actually call things out for what they are. You know, a lot of the people within the system have been manipulated and controlled. There's a lot of people who work within the system, a lot of judges and lawyers and all sorts of people who've sworn an oath to the bar who know that they live on the wrong side of history, that want to be able to step into the other side of history and the right side of history. They know the wheels are falling off, you know. So there's people in there. You can't say the whole system's bad and everybody's corrupt and everybody who's on television and everybody's involved in this. It's just one big hand and everybody's involved. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, people have ties to certain things in their families or whatever. Doesn't mean they're part of some big global conspiracy. You know, people have gotten bad raps. People have been exposed as being things that they're not, simply because of some of the ties that they've had in their past. And we've got to start looking at this sensibly. I mean, we do need to start prosecuting these people for war crimes, and I'll be quite happy to give people immunity. I don't really want to see people jailed. I just want to stop my brothers and sisters being murdered, and I want the ship of state to begin sailing in a different direction, one where it becomes smaller and smaller and smaller to the point where we don't need the state at all, you know. And if we are going to have any type of control mechanism, it needs to be one that's transparent and one that actually serves the people and not the banksters.
Yeah, and the pharmaceutical companies and all the other ones that feed off the heads of state.
They run the whole thing. You'll find the banksters, they own the pharmaceutical companies, they've got shares in them all, own all the governments, own all the armies, all the militaries, the police forces, all the resources, all that. You're fine. You look at all the chains, it all goes back to the finances, really. It's who's got the most controls more, and who's got the most? Well, it's the banksters, the 13 families at the top to control the global financial system. That's really where it all comes from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Venetian Black Nobility, the Rothschilds, the Royals, they're all in on it. Yeah.
They're all in on it. I mean, we can look at that and we can call that out and point the finger, but it doesn't really do any good, because really we should be pointing the finger at ourselves, because we're the ones who go along with it. So we've got to remove funding from it. We've got to stop going along with it. Non-compliance, that's how to do it.
Yeah.
Non-compliance in a peaceful, lawful way, a way that checkmates them in their own fiction. Again, that's what Ken's attempting to do with the World Citizen Initiative. And we need to get these groups together. People need to start making noise on the ground, going to council meetings and asking eloquent, polite questions in very, very, you know, very poignant questions. Don't pull any punches, but don't be angry. And if you've got someone there with you who's going to stand up and shout and start screaming, get rid of them. You don't want them. They're an agent provocateur. Either that or they're just programmed into this reaction, because no matter how good their heart may be, that is not the way to do it. If you can go in there and be eloquent and polite and ask the right questions, you really, really stir up a hornet's nest, because all of the public that's come along and seen it goes, well, yeah, actually that makes a lot of sense. And if you video it, put it up on YouTube and all this sort of stuff, then more people get to see it and it starts spreading out there. And that's what Full Circle Project's all about, because, like, all of these politicians are in abusive office. They really are. Something we've been trying to do with Full Circle Project is locate the legal key that we can use against all these politicians for this abusive office. But you find that they keep shifting the goalposts. That's the problem. They keep shifting the goalposts. And what I've discovered is that no matter how much dirt you get on them, no matter how much dirt you get on the government, if you really get the dirt on them and you go in there and you nail them to the wall in the court, half the time the judge will simply say, well, you've embarrassed the court. And so none of that evidence is admissible, because you're embarrassing the court. And that's all they have to say. And because you're there and you agreed to go into their jurisdiction, then all of that fine evidence that you just presented, irrefutable evidence that the government and the court system is completely guilty, they'll just dismiss it and say, well, now that none of that's admissible because you've embarrassed the court. And so now you're here in my jurisdiction. What's your other evidence? Because none of that's admissible. And so where do you go from that point? It's a stacked deck. The whole thing is stacked. So even if we are going to take these people in a tribunal it's very difficult to do it within their bar structure. So that's the problem that we face in all of those methods, you know. So really what you need is a groundswell of people to simply realize that what we're dealing with is other people. And even if they're writing and looking in their law books to see what their exemptions are and see what their immunities are, well, how is that acceptable? It's just something that someone wrote down on a piece of paper. What, you elected me to head of the club, so I wrote down in the club books that I can't be held accountable for anything that I do. So now I can burn the club down. I can take everybody. I can rape them. I can take all their resources, steal their homes and everything. But you guys all agreed to belong to my club, and it says here that I can do all this because I wrote it down in the book. Now, would you let me do that? You know, and that's what our governments are doing. You know, we've developed this abusive relationship with government, and they've written down all these rules to protect the abusers from ever being held accountable for their actions, and they're daring to call it law. You know, really, we've got to bring this back to natural law, which is do no harm. And if we are going to bring it back to law, let's bring it back to constitutions and the Nuremberg trials and the Geneva Convention and all of this sort of stuff. Even take it back to the Magna Carta if you want to. You know, I mean, even the Magna Carta, I mean, people argue the Magna Carta all the time. And I say, well, if you really want to look at law, and if you think law is real and all of this stuff's real, well, the Magna Carta was signed under duress. So how valid's that? You know, they've got King John, they held a knife to his throat and said, if you don't kill her, we're going to kill you. If you don't sign, we're going to kill you. So how valid is the Magna Carta? Even though he was a tyrant and the Magna Carta is a beautiful document, under law, it's not valid because it was signed under duress. So, and even coming back to our constitution, I mean, there's talk whether it was ratified and all this sort of stuff. I mean, all these things are fictions. They're all fictions. You know, all we need is common decency and intelligence and just do the right thing in all you do. And that would be a big change, you know, but we've got to start calling these politicians out as people. And asking that they show cause where they shouldn't be held accountable for their actions. Don't talk to the office that Malcolm Turnbull holds. Malcolm Turnbull is just a man. He's not any better than you. He's not any better than anybody else. He's just a guy that we employ to manage things for us in a responsible way. And he's doing a god-awful job because he's really serving the bankers more than he's serving us. He can spend $650,000 per bomb on bombs he drops on Iraq, but he can't afford to feed the homeless people or clothe people in this country. He needs to bring in mandatory vaccinations and remove benefits from people, bring in all these austerity measures and make life as difficult as he can. They put $3 an hour parking meters in Byron so they can spend $650,000 per bomb on blowing up kids in Syria. Well, what's this all about? They've got 600 corporations that have got tax-free status in this country. Why don't you start taxing them and you wouldn't have to put parking meters all around the country, you know? Why don't we start doing things a little bit sensibly, you know? So we've got to start calling it out. We really do, you know.
Yeah, it's scary to think that, you know, our beautiful country will be turned into a big mining hole with all our water poisoned and our people poisoned or turned into bots with all this nanotechnology that they're spraying on us and injecting in us and putting into our water. It's absolutely criminal. And, I'm just really frightened for the next generation if we don't do something now.
Well, I think we will. I don't think we're going to stand for it. I think people are seeing it now. And it is. It's criminal. I mean, that's exactly the right word. It's criminal. And so that's why we have to start looking above their legislation. And I'm not saying break the law. We've got to look at what the legislation is that they're writing. If they've written down on paper that they can't be held accountable for their actions, how is that valid? How is that a valid law? Especially if it can be seen that that law was written down by a war criminal. Did that person who wrote that law, was that person in support of the state of Israel while Gaza Strip exists? Well, yeah, that person's a war criminal. So how can that legislation be valid? Because it was put in place by someone in breach of international law, someone who was holding a position that they didn't have any right to hold. If you really want to get into their law, you can start looking at things such as the Australia Act and what happened in 1972, when they replaced the seal of England with the seal of Australia and all that sort of stuff, which isn't valid. You know, all the stuff that they did when they created the Commonwealth of Australia, which basically took over back then. I mean, it's been happening before then as well, but it was around about then when you saw the English seal disappear and the Australian seal appear, which is not a valid seal. We didn't have a referendum for that. That was just basically the corporate takeover of the country. You know, with the Australia Act, I mean, That's where the whole thing comes down for local councils. People saying local councils don't have constitutional recognition, therefore they can't enact laws. Well, under the Australia Act, they can. Now, because we had a referendum in that year, would we grant local councils constitutional recognition? We voted no. So Bob Hawke introduced the Australia Act, which basically gave them, you know, all the powers that they wanted anyway under the Australia Act. So he basically went against the Australian people and did that. It does say in the Australia Act that the Constitution is not affected. So therefore it kind of nulls itself out as well. But again, this is a rabbit hole and a debate you'll get into in a court, and it'll take you months. They'll tie you up in red tape. And meanwhile, all the countries have been destroyed around you. By the time you come out of the courtroom, you don't recognize the place. So, you know, we step above it and really call the abuse of office out for what it is. Call out the abusive relationship we have with government. But we need a strong communal voice for it, which is what we're trying to do with Full Circle. Like I was saying before, you can go and log on there and you can create a support group in your area, find people in your area that want to be involved and have these discussion groups, create a strong response, pick out an eloquent speaker, and then go in there and ask the right questions. And you're going to do this publicly enough and you're going to start making a difference. There's meetings where the council are on the beach having meetings here and all sorts of stuff. I mean, there's council events that happen where there'll be a council representative there saying something. You can have a crowd of people there and you can approach them in the right way. It doesn't have to be while they're on stage. You can just have people surround the guy as he's leaving the stage and have a bit of a chat to him, you know, in a polite way, have someone video it, see what his responses are, you know, and say, well, ask them, when's the next council meeting that we can come to address this issue? We want to come and bring this up and have this addressed and have it on the council minutes. We want this issue attended to. You know, we're not here to just make a little show. I've come to tell you about this, to ask your opinion on it, and to ask you when you can make time available for us to go and discuss this matter with council, because we as a community have the right to talk to our council. That's what we want to do. So we've got to start taking this sort of action on the ground and let them know that we're going to start throwing sticks in their spokes. We're going to start slowing things down, you know. And even with things like the TPP, I mean, this has gotten out of control. We need to slow that down. That's already been signed in, I think. And so that's a real problem. And again, the problem we're going to have with that is the more we do slow things down, the more taxes are raised. So we need to ask that question with government as well. Why have you signed into an agreement which agrees to raise taxes if people interfere with corporate profit, if that corporate profit can be seen to be destroying our environment? And why have you signed into a deal like this and called it good for our economy or good for the people? Please explain how this is good for anyone, you know, and show us. I mean, show us. Because these deals are going to see the destruction of this country. They're going to see the destruction of every country that's signed into these deals. So the people need to start asking things, questions in the right way, publicly enough, and start holding the people who signed off on the legislation accountable for their actions. You know, that's the path we have to take, you know. But you need strong support groups around you to do it. So that's what we're trying to do with Full Circle Project, get these strong support groups in local communities all around the world.
Yeah. So, but what about public mandates? So we actually issuing mandates?
Well, I've suggested that for a long time, public mandates, you know. These would be a good thing, but you need to get a lot of people involved in it, you know. We mandate that the government do this. You know, the problem is that the legal system has changed so much in the last 10 years. This is why none of the Freeman stuff will work either, because it's changed so much just in the last 12 months or 2 years.
Yeah.
And this stuff is now being seen as anti-government extremists and all this sort of stuff, and where you can be arrested without charge or trial. So, you know, just through the wording and what the media is promoting, you can see that this has been a trap. The whole Freeman movement's been a trap. Now, I've never recommended that anybody use any Freeman tactics with police or anything. I mean, it's interesting to, you know, learn how the fiction works, but these aren't tactics that'll work. So, you know, all these pathways, you know, we've got to step above them all. We really do. We can't allow ourselves to be coerced and led down these rabbit holes of inaction and blind rabbit holes that won't work. Too many of them won't work. You need a really strong communal voice to call this. And you're not going to find any remedy in the legal fiction anywhere, I don't believe. unless you can get a strong enough voice to be able to checkmate it within itself, you know, by basically exposing it as being as convoluted as it is and exposing it as being a double-edged sword, because it is a double-edged sword. You know, we can use it against itself if we're sensible about it. So, yeah, that's my great hope. I hope that answered that question.
Yeah, using their own laws against them, that's right. I mean, we've seen too many good people go down the Freeman rabbit hole and, you know, get lost in the rhetoric. And our brother, Dean Clifford, for example, he's just gone and become imprisoned again. They've imprisoned him for 22 months. And he just got out of jail, you know, and he's gone straight back in on trumped up charges, you know. So even people that know their stuff are getting caught up.
It doesn't surprise me, you know. It doesn't, because people don't know their stuff. And as much as I love Dean, and he's got a lot of good stuff to say.
Yeah.
There's this whole, with a lot of people, there's a personal battle going on. Me against the system. And it's like I said, you know, I've got this knowledge and now I'm a free man and now I won't pay taxes and I won't do this and I'll do that and blah, blah, blah. Really, you've stepped out of the little cage and into a bigger cage. You're not free. It doesn't matter how much you do this and how you're paying taxes on your petrol. You're paying taxes on everything you buy anyway. So, you know, you're not free while the rest of the world is enslaved. It doesn't work that way. You can't. If people go off on these what I call is sovereign narcissism. People think that they're free. They take their plates off their car and they run off and start claiming all this stuff and start having arguments with police on the side of the road. It's confrontational. It doesn't get anywhere. It ends up getting you in jail. And you're not free by doing this. You're not free by arguing within their fiction. You're free when we wake the world up to the fact, that wake the people up to the fact that regardless of the fiction, the world is run by criminals. It's run by criminals. It's run by pedophiles. It's run by people who are waging war. Look at all of these wars around the planet. Look at the way they're destroying the groundwater with coal seam gas. Look at all the stuff they're doing. Now they come along and tell you vaccines are safe for you and they're putting fluoride in the water to keep you healthy. You know, while they're bombing kids in Syria and destroying the water table and waging all this war around the planet, they're criminals. Let's call it out. Let's call it out. You know, you need a groundswell of people to just start calling this out and asking the government to please show cause why it shouldn't be held accountable for its actions. This is no way to run the world. If it was, then we wouldn't have all these wars, which can all be attributed to this banking system. It's been so well proven that ISIS is being run by the West. You know, it's been well proven that Israel is buying 75% of ISIS's oil from them, funneling it out through Turkey. All this stuff is well proven. Ask the politicians to start explaining why you're supporting this stuff. Why are you supporting it? You're a war criminal. You're all war criminals. You should all be arrested. Can you please show cause why you shouldn't? Because here's all the war crimes that you're supporting. Show me that you're not. And it doesn't matter what you've written down on your paper to say that you shouldn't be held accountable for all this crap you've created. Because you wrote it down doesn't make it law, you know. And when you get the whole country stand up and call this, we'll see some response. But if you're going to learn all this Freeman stuff and then wander around saying, I'm free, while all of this world is being destroyed around you, you're an idiot. You're a moron. There is no remedy in any of that. Even learning all of that stuff, learning all about the different legal codes and all the constitutions and all this stuff and trust law and all these things. I went down all these rabbit holes and checked out.
Yeah, me too.
It leads nowhere. It's useful in seeing how their fiction works. But when you start stepping into it and start trying to use that against them, you just get yourself in jail.
So that's
what happens. So there's no remedy there. That's only useful in knowing how it works. What you've got to understand is that the world is run by criminals. And we've got a piece of evidence to prove it. And not only that, we've got, if you're going to have any respect for law at all, even if you're looking down all these free man rabbit holes and you must believe in law in some way. So, okay, let's go to the Geneva Convention and call all of these people out for the war criminals that they are, free the children in Gaza Strip and arrest this entire global cacistocracy in one fell swoop because we have all the tools we need to do it. You know, I mean, that's my argument. Let's step above the whole thing and simply call this out for what it is and get these, you know, it's hard not to swear, but to get these, you know, out of power, we've really got to get these people out of power by simply calling them out for what they are. Malcolm Turnbull is a criminal. He's a war criminal because he supports war crimes. So is almost everybody in his party. So is almost everybody in the opposition and in all previous governments that we've had as well. All of these people are war criminals. John Howard is a war criminal through his support for this fake war on terror by sending people over to bomb Iraq the way he did, by Malcolm Turnbull sending people over to bomb Syria, by all of the support these nations show Israel, which is all of what these wars are. They're all proxy wars for Israel, all of them. These are war crimes, and we need to call it. And if we call it, we'll stop all the fracking, we'll stop all the mandatory vaccines, we'll stop everything, because all of the legislation that's allowed all of this, every piece of legislation that's been brought in, all these 70 pieces of legislation since 9/11, all of this can be rolled back because it can be proven that all of this legislation was written by war criminals. So let's call it. That's my argument. Let's step above the whole thing. There is no remedy in constitutions and free man stuff and this and commercial liens and all this shit. That's playing with their rules. That's playing with all their stuff. They're criminals. Let's call them. Let's call them and let's remove funding from them. And that's what, like, again, that's what Ken's doing with World Citizen. We'll use your fiction. Sure. We'll use it enough to checkmate you and make us contractually obligated to remove all funding from you under your own law. What are you going to do then? What are you going to do then? Because now you're even asking me to pay tax. You're asking me to break the law. You're asking me to break a contractual obligation that I have. So, you know, there's ways to do this, sensible ways to do this, which will make a real stand. Well, and at that point, you've got legal standing to argue the point as well, under their own fiction, you know.
Well, Max, the power of the spoken word, we have just called it. And every viewer viewing this that feels the way we do, we've just called it. We've called it here live on CCN, you know, let it be known, let it be said, it is done, we've called it, you know what I mean? By the power of spoken words, with the witness that we are to each other, the divine witness, the divine masculine, the divine feminine, we've called it, it is called, it is, you know, and now we need the support. We need the support. We need the people get together, as you said, in their community groups, approaching their politicians. Absolutely. But in every single way, let it be called, let it be called, let it be done. Let the word mouth magic be spoken.
And, well, that's what we have to do. That's what we have to do. And please do support the World Citizen Initiative. We're over halfway with the funding. We've only got like nine days left for funding. We're really trying to do this. And what the funding's going to be used for is to basically like get everything fully set up and watertight, get the legal advice that we need, get everything put in place. Cause like I said, there are judges and politicians and even, you know, really people quite high up in the echelons of the system who want out, you know, and we've got contact with some of these people and they want out. They know they're on the wrong side of history and they need to be able to get out and not be seen as being a breach of their oaths and things. So they can't be prosecuted because the system will come for them. Nobody's immune from it. You know, so they need to have a proper way out as well. So that's what we're trying to do with the funding. And then the initiative will be launched in February and we want to get 1 million people or 2 million people or 3 million people at least involved in this. I reckon we will. I reckon we'll get more. They'll sign up for this. And it's a simple thing to do. And I really believe it'll make a difference. And then we've got a groundswell and we've got people who've got legal standing within their fiction to be able to stand up and make a difference. And we'll find that all of these things these politicians are doing, we can search, but we have to be prepared to call it out. We can't be dancing around in their fiction, petitioning people, voting people in, voting people out, calling for commercial liens, doing all the stuff that they give us, all the rabbit holes they give us to go down to tie us up in red tape. Rather than simply saying, hey, listen, you're a criminal. You're a war criminal. You're a provable war criminal. So why on earth do I have to abide by the rules that you wrote? If we're going to abide by any rules, well, here's a piece of paper written back in 1945 or 46 that says you're a war criminal. So we'll abide by that rule. If you can weasel your way out of this one, then we'll talk about the other stuff you've written down. But at the moment, according to this document, you're a war criminal who should be in jail. So please explain yourself and get out of that before we even talk about the other stuff you've written. Because as far as I can see, it's all invalid because you're a war criminal, provable by this document and by your actions. By how many statements would you like me to play you where you've said on the news that you support the state of Israel? You know, you're a war criminal. It's as simple as that. And that's nothing against the Jews. And that's nothing against Israel even existing. It's simply the actions of a rogue government. Like I said, it doesn't matter if this is Japan doing it to Paraguay. It doesn't matter if it's Nicaragua doing it to Costa Rica. It doesn't matter who it is. You can't treat people this way, and it's against the law. It's a war crime. And not only that, it's child abuse, because the average age in Gaza is 17. So this is just not acceptable, and all of our politicians are supporting it. If they're going to support this type of criminal behavior, this war crime, and this type of child abuse, you know, what, there's 44,000 disabled people in Gaza, 44,000 people permanently disabled, most of them children, because Israel's been dropping bombs on them, and you tell me you have Israel has the right to defend itself. It never defended itself. It's an aggressive state, always has been, and you're supporting it, and you're supporting this war crime, so you need to be held called out, and you need to be held accountable, and you need to show me how any of your legislation is valid under your own freaking law. You know? That's the stance we need to have. You get a nation stand up and call this, you're going to see this government scurrying under the rocks where they came from. You know, so, you know, they're a bunch of cockroaches, they're a bunch of criminals, and we need to call them out for what they are, because that's what they are, provable under their own law. So let's call it, folks, let's call it. That's how to stop all these other problems, you know, because all these other problems are symptoms of this systemic corruption, and the systemic corruption is what needs to be dealt with, and these corrupt criminals that are populating all of our governments have written their own rules in place that have voided them from any type of prosecution. Well, that's just not acceptable. You know, it's not acceptable, because we're people and you're people, and no one has any superiority over anybody else. No one has any more value than anybody else. You are people we elect to positions of management, and you're all in abuse of office. So we're calling it, you know, and do that, and you'll fix all the problems, folks. That's the way out. Save Gaza, save the world. I've been saying that for a long time. And please do get involved in the World Citizen Initiative. These two things will make a real difference. I really believe they will. And this is the year that we have to do it. We've got every opportunity, we've got every reason to. You know, mandatory vaccinations, everything. This can all be addressed by addressing these two issues, you know. So get involved, folks.
Yeah. The 1945 piece of legislation that you mentioned, that incriminates these people. Do you have the name of that?
It's the Fourth Geneva Convention, Article 33 of the Fourth Geneva Convention, which names collective punishment as a war crime. And Gaza Strip is collective punishment. This was based on the situation in the Warsaw Ghetto, where a lot of people were trapped in the Warsaw Ghetto and I just left to perish in the ghetto. This is the same thing. And what they did in the Warsaw Ghetto is they just basically put a fence around the place and they deprived them of everything. And then when they started to rebel, they called them terrorists. And they sent the military in there to contain the terrorists all the time, which is exactly what they're doing in Gaza Strip. They put a wall around them, they deprive them of anything, and if they fight back in any way, they call them terrorists, and they go in and carry out bombing campaigns. I'd say most of the rocket attacks we see launched from Gaza are carried out by Israel anyway, just as an excuse for Israel to go and bomb them. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu is a habitual liar. He said recently that it was the Palestinians that were responsible for the Holocaust. Did you see that one? Hitler didn't really want to kill the Jews in Germany. He just wanted to expel them, which is true. He did want to expel them. There was no intention to kill them. And he said, but he came to see the whoever it was in Palestine, the Muftar in Palestine, and he said, oh, no, if you expel them, they'll all come here. You need to burn them all, you know. So it was the Palestinians who convinced Hitler to carry out the Holocaust. This was what Netanyahu actually said. He just makes stuff up on the spot. I tell you, he's got the flights of fantasy are incredible. And there's just been a report come in the other day that there's been an ISIS terrorist backed by Iran who came in to assassinate Benjamin Netanyahu. He's arrested this ISIS terrorist, obviously Iranian-backed. So this is fiction. This is just as Israel's been exposed as providing medical assistance to ISIS in the Golan Heights, been funding them for years, is buying 75% of their oil through Turkey. All these ties have been exposed. ISIS are driving all the way through Syria. They seem to have left Israel's pipeline well alone, which runs from Iraq to Israel through Syria. They're leaving all this alone. They're driving around all these Muslim nations, destroying Muslim countries, destroying Muslim infrastructure, wiping out ancient Muslim temples, anything to do with Islam. And so now that all this has been exposed, there's suddenly a death threat of an assassination against Netanyahu by an ISIS member who happens to be backed by Iran, of course, because Iran is a big threat. You know, he's been saying Iran is like 1 year away from a nuclear bomb since 1990, or 3 years away from a nuclear bomb since 1990. He's been saying this. Iran is a country that hasn't attacked anyone in over 270 years. You know, it's not a threat to anybody. You know, and Netanyahu, I mean, the timing of this is impeccable. Just to try to give Israel and himself some regain some of their flagging credibility, they bring this completely and utterly theatrical and totally transparent and contrived terrorist threat, Iranian backed. I mean, it's so transparent and so predictable. I mean, Netanyahu is a psychopath. He's a blatant war criminal, warmonger. He should be in jail. He's one of the most dangerous men in the world today, I would say, Netanyahu. His ideologies and his government, it's an extremist government. And the problem is that he isn't the most extremist person within his government. You know, if he were to be replaced, we'd probably end up with someone worse. You know, but I mean, look at Netanyahu. He was arrested. He was elected on the platform that the assault against Gaza in 2009, Operation Cast Lead, didn't go far enough, and he wanted to finish the job. In other words, go and exterminate all the people in Gaza. But they won't ever do that. They'll never exterminate all the people in Gaza because they need them there. They need the Palestinians there. I mean, you look at Israel and Palestine. Israel could go and wipe out Palestine in a week. If they were all terrorists and they really wanted to, Gaza Strip's tiny. It's 25 miles long, 4.5 miles wide. You know, hemmed in by a wall and they got no weapons. It'd be so easy to go and just take the whole lot out. You could do it in a week. And same with the West Bank. You just go in there, send the military and take the whole place out in a week. Expel all these terrible terrorists. But they don't because they need them there, because they need it to be perceived that Israel is always under threat and always under attack and always needs to have a strong military to defend itself. This is the theater that they create. But it's aggressive. All their actions are aggressive. Their actions against Lebanon, against Syria, against Palestine, against all their neighbors have always been aggressive. It doesn't defend itself in any way, shape or form. It's an aggressive force. It's the IOF, the Israel Occupation Force, or the Israeli Offense Force. It's not an idea.
Yes, Defense Force. Yeah, they've just bombed. They've just destroyed a big veggie garden in Gaza that was feeding the people. I mean, they've already taken away all the infrastructure. And, I mean, the Israeli Offense Force also just bombed a Yemen hospital. Hmm. I mean, the crimes are just continuing right around Syria, Yemen, Gaza. This is such a and a lot of the ISIS investors in ISIS, thanks to the good work of Scott Bennett in the Shell Game, who brought it to public attention. There's members of the Saudi Arabian elite as well.
Yeah, well, Saudi's got their fingers all over this. They always have. I mean, Saudi Arabia and Israel. Yeah. Saudi Arabia is a puppet regime that was put in place by the West anyway, the Saudi government.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Israeli war crimes are insane, the stuff. And it destroys the veggie gardens in Gaza all the time. The excuse is that terrorists may hide in the undergrowth and get close to the border to launch rockets. So they send in these ridiculous crop poisons, which poison all the food so it can't be eaten. Do everything they can to make life as miserable as possible for the people in Gaza. This, of course, promotes people adopting extremist ideologies and wanting to hate Israel. So then when you talk to Palestinian people, he says, I want to destroy Israel. And, see, they want to destroy Israel. That's why we have to do what we do. Well, they want to destroy Israel because of what you do to them all the time, because you've killed all their families, killed all their friends, bulldozed their homes, poisoned their crops, kept them in collective punishment, removed them of every single piece of dignity you could under the guise of preserving peace. You know, you're bulldozing homes while you're having peace talks in West Bank. What is this? You're bulldozing homes. If anyone throws a rock at a tank, then their family will have their home bulldozed. The tank may have just run over your sister or your brother or destroyed the neighbor's home or whatever. But if some 5 or 6 year old kid or 8 year old kid throws a rock at the tank while it's moving, if you throw a rock at a tank, it's 10 years in jail. If you throw a rock at a tank while it's moving, it's 25 years in jail. It doesn't matter if you're 8 years old. You know, they harvest these kids. They got thousands of kids in prison. They harvest their organs. They sell organs to people. They have about 6,000 people held without charge or trial in Israeli prisons. Now, they just go into a black hole and they're never heard of again, you know. And you got a massive amount of organ sales coming out of Israel as well. Where are they getting all these organs from? You know, it's an absolutely disgusting pariah state. It's absolutely disgusting, disgraceful. It's an ulcer on the face of the earth in its current form. It really is. It could be a beautiful place. It could be where the Jews and the Palestinians and the Muslims got along fine the way they always did the thousands of years before the Westerners came and got involved, the Khazars came and took over the place. That's what it could be. But at the moment, it's just a massive instability mechanism. But by being that, as I keep saying, it provides an opportunity for us. It provides an opportunity for the world to call it out and call out all the politicians that support it, because it's the same people, and these are the people who are destroying all of our own countries. And it gives us the ability to do that, you know, because these people are carrying out war crimes all over the planet. I mean, like coming back to the Saudis, it's a brutally obscene regime, the Saudi regime. Well, they were appointed the head of the Human Rights Council, and that very week they beheaded 47 people or something that week, or 60 people or something that day, 48 people. I don't know. It was a large number of people. They beheaded the very week they were appointed the head of the Human Rights Council, and they're doing this while they're bombing Yemen, which is the poorest country in the region. And the war crimes in Yemen have been incredible. Cluster bombs, all sorts of stuff, all banned munitions. It's absolutely disgraceful. All being funneled in there by England and the West. England's got a huge tie. They sold $8 billion in arms, or £8 billion worth of arms to the Saudis in the last 5 years. And now they've got English forces in there saying, oh, we're just advising them on how not to break human rights laws. What? The whole attack on Yemen is a breach of human rights. You're not in there giving them advice on human rights. You're in there seeing how your bombs are being spent. That's why you're in there. You're in there training them and telling them. You know, you go in there to explain how they need to uphold human rights. In the same breath, you see them bombing a hospital.
Hospital, yeah.
What's going on there, you know? And everyone's like getting on the bandwagon. Oh, the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Israelis. Oh, you're dropping bombs on kids. Can we come? You know, it's like Syria. Our idiot. Like, let's go and bomb children. We don't want to create more refugees, do we? You want to go and bomb Syria so we stop the flow of refugees. How does this work? You know, and who are you bombing in Syria anyway? Well, you're bombing ISIS. Well, where's ISIS? How come Putin could go in there in 3 weeks and stop them in their tracks? You haven't been able to do it in 3 years. What's there? You know, oh, it's because you're funding them. How come ISIS are all driving Abrams tanks and howitzers and
Hummus.
There's Humvees and fleets of Toyotas. They're all using AR-15s and M-16s, and the U.S. is doing weapons drops to them. Israel is giving them medical attention in the Golan Heights, buying 75% of their oil off them. Oh, yeah, you're really trying to stop ISIS, are you? And now our brain-dead moron prime minister goes and jumps on the bandwagon. Oh, yeah, let's go bomb kids in Syria.
Syria,
150K a bomb. Oh, well, we're not at war with Syria. How is bombing children in Syria keeping Australia safe? All you're doing is make Syrians hate Australia. Oh, gee, we might get a terrorist attack here from some irate Syrian. Oh, well, let's bring a whole bunch of refugees in. Then we can blame it on one of them. I mean, it's such a setup. It's such a setup. Well, I'm so sick to death of this world being run by these criminal scumbag bankster puppets. It's annoying, and we have to call it, folks. We have to call it. So, yeah, I mean, the whole Middle East, I mean, if you really want to understand what's going on in the Middle East, go and read a document called A Strategy for Israel in the 1980s by Oded Yinnan. You'll find it on my website on the homepage. Scroll down till you see essential reading. And I read a document called Confessions of a British Spy. They're both there. Read those documents. And then if you want to understand what's going on in Europe, go read a document called The Kalergi Plan. And that is what's going on in Europe. That is what the whole refugee influx into Europe is all about. And you see the whole lot there. It's all outlined in those three documents. The whole Confessions of a British Spy shows how the monarchy was set up in Saudi Arabia, and talks about it's way back, but it shows how it all happened, Lawrence of Arabia sort of stuff. Of course, out of that came King Faisal, who wasn't too bad, and he threatened to cut off all supplies to the Allies during the 1972 Israeli war against the Arab world, and when that happened, they said, well, if you do, we'll bomb all the oil fields. And he said, well, I don't care. We don't want all that stuff that you're addicted to. We'll go back to living on dates, the way we always did for centuries, you know. And so they deposed him, and they put it in the Saudi family. And he was basically assassinated by the CIA, and then the current puppet regime was put in there, which is a brutal, absolutely brutally oppressive regime. So read those documents. If you read those three documents in the sexual reading on the crowhouse.com, you'll understand exactly what's going on in the Middle East today and what Israel's all about.
Yeah. And also, if you want to have a look at who's actually, you know, supporting the exposure of ISIS, I also recommend Scott Bennett's book called Shell Game, which exposes the 19,000 bank accounts that fund ISIS. And that was the intel came from US citizen Swiss banker Brad Birkenfeld, who Scott Bennett spent time with in prison, who revealed this. Now, when he brought it to public attention, when he took these documents to Congress, to senators, to the New York Times and Washington Post, no one wanted to touch it. It's very, very interesting. And that's what you're talking about, that the funding of these AK-47s, these Humvees, these Toyotas, these fleets, all this arms, everyone's got their finger in the pie. Halliburton gets paid to rebuild nations. You know, everybody's got an interest in the pipelines, the oil, that, you know, Turkey and how they're being, you know, brought in as the second Ottoman Empire, and the mass movements of these militant aged men that are marauding through Europe now, raping our women.
It's all been set up. The whole thing's been staged. It's all been set up, and it's all been run by the same people. The whole lot has been run by the same people. You just read those documents, read the Kalugi plan, read the Confessions of a British Spy, and read Oded Yunus' plan, and you see where it's all coming from. It's all been set up by the same people. So it's important that people see it and see it for what it is. The whole fall of Europe is it's all been completely staged. It's all been completely contrived. And so I was saying to someone the other day, I was at a gathering last night, and I said, has everyone here been to Europe? And a couple of people put their hands up and said, oh, I haven't. And I said, oh, too late, you missed it. You know, it's gone. It's gone now. And that's an unfortunate thing. The Europe that we knew, it's not there anymore. It's just going to change more and more. It's never going to go back to the way it was. You've got all these migrants running rampant across the place now, like tens of thousands of them. And it's going to change. Europe is going to change because there's certainly agents provocateurs that have been planted in amongst these people. Probably just your average garden variety extremists as well that have been grown up with that mentality, been trained to think that way. And also, you'll find that a lot of the countries have been set up to kind of foster this and allow it to happen. The countries such as France and Germany. Like in France, there's whole sections of France where there's Syrian refugees and Middle Eastern refugees that have come there years and years ago, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, and even longer. And they've been put in very, very substandard housing in very, very poor areas of town and been given absolutely no support. So they've been left there to have children and basically foster this malcontent for the last 20 years. And these kids are growing up with a chip on their shoulder. And now they've got their brothers coming from overseas, and half of these kids that are growing up in the suburbs have got kind of extremist ideologies anyway because of the life they've been forced to live in France, whereas not where they come from. They're ostracized by the French people. They're presented as being these, oh yes, bring the refugees in. We love them. We care for them. Then they're brought in, put in substandard housing, left to fend for themselves, and they're ostracized by the rest of the community. So it's kind of seeded this. And you'll find similar things in Germany, similar things in England, like where there's substandard housing where they put the immigrants, you know, to foster this and to breed this kind of malcontent. So you've got these ticking time bombs within all the cities. And in the right environment, you're going to have all of these domestic extremists, you know, oh, yes, French citizens now doing things wrong and rah, rah, rah. So, you know, it's all been fostered and contrived, and it's all part of the Kalugi plan. It's all been very, very well played.
Yeah, just last week we saw riots in Melbourne, in different parts of Melbourne, with the African new immigrants, you know, that are lashing out because they've been stacked up in these multi-level high rises, you know, and pretty much removed from the rest of society. And you go through places like Kensington, Footscray, you know, where these places are, where these housing developments are, and they're lower income, disadvantaged areas, and you're seeing these, you know, great populations that don't even have a hope of integrating into society, unlike the white Europeans that came to Australia in the 50s, one of which, you know, was my family.
It's been set up that way, and it's set up there. It's like you bring them here, you bring them from a very, very terrible environment. These are refugees that have come from a very, yep. very horrendous situations. You bring them here with a promise of a new life, and they get here and they see the suburbs and they see people living, and they go, well, that's cool. You know, all I need is a house somewhere and to be able to meet the people and get a job and move forward. But they don't do that. They'll put them in substandard housing or pile them up in high rises and keep them locked in there. Just stay there while we figure things out. And that might be a year, or it might be 2 years, or it might be 5 years. They come here, they end up in detention centers. So this breeds this malcontent. So of course, then you see them start writing and saying, hey, well, what's going on here? So of course, then all the locals go, oh, well, look, and we bring these people here and look what they do. They riot. We give them this. We've got them in, I've got them in homes, in high rises. I mean, what are they complaining about? I wish I lived in a high rise. You know, like you have all of this stuff. It's all the programming, and it's designed to breed malcontent and to bring about a clash of civilizations. You know, World War III will be fought in the suburbs. It'll be a clash of civilizations, which has been completely contrived. You know, allow the suburbs and allow the people to destroy themselves. Then it becomes more manageable, part of the depopulation agenda. It all comes back to the same thing. And it also, when you bring all these immigrants in to all these different countries, then you destroy the social infrastructure and you allow it to just run rampant and fall apart. They all start interbreeding with each other. And in 100 years, you've got the Jews and the Goy. You know, this is all part of the Kalugi plan. Breed all the races together into one race. But the Jewish people are not allowed to intermarry or interbreed. They've got to remain Jewish. This isn't anti-Semitic, folks. This is just the plan. This is just the plan. It's a Kalugi plan, and it's how it's all unfolding. Like I said, go read those three documents. Look at the world today. There it is. And you just got to look at it and see the Jewish influence in all of our governments. And you can call it a Zionist influence, but really it's a Jewish influence. It's that ideology. But not all Jews go along with it. There's still a lot of good Jews out there that really don't go along with this stuff. But it's the extremist Jew, the extremist ideology that exists within Judaism. And extremist elements exist within all religious factions, folks. You know, there are Christian extremists. Look at the Spanish Inquisition. There are certainly Muslim extremists, and there are Jewish extremists. And if I even say that, I get called anti-Semitic and a Jew hater. So that shows you how well contrived this extremism is, that I can be vilified for pointing out the fact that all religions have extremist elements. So you can see how this has been done, you know, and how the actual Jews, the good Jews around the world, are being caught up in this and are being vilified for the actions of this extremist group, which has taken over control of their governments and has infiltrated into other Western governments and is now controlling them as well. This is why all of these governments support Israel when Israel is blatantly carrying out war crimes. It's this whole plan that they've had. And if you read back through the Kalugi plan, you read back through their documents, you find that this was all put into motion proper in around about 1858 or 1868 is when it all started. And World War I and World War II, which were essentially the same war with a big quiet spot in the middle, it was all contrived by these same people. The whole situation was brought about to create Palestine, to create all of this tension in order to create this refugee crisis, to push these people into Europe, to create multiculturalism all around the world, which would eventually merge all the races together. It's all there in their documents. It's all there. And this is the same. This group of people who've adopted the Jewish faith and are doing this are Khazars from around the Caspian Sea area. Mm-hmm. And they have infiltrated their way into all governments. These people, these Khazar converted Jews, have been kicked out of 90 countries, 138 times, I think, because they've been kicked out of countries more than once. But they keep getting kicked out of countries because as soon as they come into a country, they undermine it, they undermine the morals, they undermine the social structure, they can start to control the financial system, and they impoverish and take over the country and just create all this mess. And they got kicked out of so many countries that what they did was they went out and they infiltrated all countries and all political systems. And they did it, and they've been able to do it via the invention of the word anti-Semitism and through the mechanism of the Holocaust, which has given them this mass sympathy for the Holocaust. And, oh, you can't speak out against the Jews because that's anti-Semitic. These poor downtrodden people, you need to allow them to do what they want to do because they're the most downtrodden people in history, which is rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. And the whole thing has been contrived. And the real Jews and the people who actually support their faith in the proper way are the ones who get the blame for it. But really, it's an extremist element that exists within Judaism, which are people who are not even real Jews. They're Khazars. They have no genetic or hereditary ties to the land of Israel at all. They come from the area between the Caspian and the Red Sea and just above the Caucasus. That's where they come from. Ukraine is kind of Kiev was one of their cities. So that's where they come from. They're not Israel at all. That's just doing it all.
Thank you so much for sharing that information, Max. We have to go now, but let's stop funding Israel and let's get together into community groups. Thank you so much for supporting CCN, everyone. Please donate to their fund, and we'll see you back this time next week. Thank you very much.